12 minutes after 2 o'clock, it brings great pleasure to me to bring in my good friend, great friend of the city of Litchfield. I think he mentioned him about 12 times last night, Robbie Robinson. Good afternoon, Robbie.
Hello, John Michael. How are you? It's so great to talk to you, my friend.
Oh, it's great to have you back on. I've been watching your shows on Monday night and also watching your participation with your buddies Ray and Steve. And my goodness, you are just all over the net, and you are all over hobnobbing with some pretty famous people all the time.
It's been, I know a lot of people are not busy in our music business, but I've been busier than I have when I was touring, so it's just a new adventure for me.
I was so shocked to see Tony Orlando, and saw you on there with David Cohn last night. Tell me about this little get-together you do with the boys from New York. This is fun.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm having so much fun with it, and when they talked to me about doing it, I knew I should say no, because Mondays I'm doing my Jam and Java show in the evening, and there's a lot of time spent just prepping for that and getting the nuts and bolts together, but it sounded like so much fun, I just had to say yes. And so Ray Negron has been a friend of mine for 10 or 15 years now, and he's been with the New York Yankees since 1973. He's got quite a story. And then Steve Vaccaro is the co-host, and I had done their show a few times through the years. It started out as a radio show years ago, and then they moved to this podcast. And so I had done a few of their shows, and we always hit it off well, and we have a great chemistry. So they said, about 2 months ago, they said, why don't you come on board, be the music director and co-host? And so that's my role on that show, and we're having a lot of fun. It's East meets West, and I wear my Dodger garb typically, and they do their Yankees bit, and we're having a lot of fun. And a lot of great guests, as you mentioned.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I was telling earlier and visiting with Sean when we did our little get-together a while ago, talking about hearing the David Cohn stories. And I had forgotten. You know, I remember him as a Met, and I remember the Coneheads, you know, his own personal fans that he had. But I had forgotten about the Yankee time and, my goodness, pitching a perfect game for the Yankees.
Yeah, and it's even more. I don't know if you heard his story, but he pitched it on Yogi Berra Day. Don Larson, who was the great Yankee pitcher, who in 1955 pitched the only perfect game in the World Series,
right,
just happened to be there because it was Yogi Berra Day. Man. It was just an amazing coincidence that it all happened, and he pitched that perfect game, which is, in baseball, for those who are not baseball savvy, pitching a perfect game is one of the rarest feats in baseball history.
Oh,
there's only been a handful of them through 100 plus years.
Yeah, that is for sure. And not very many. And we saw the video that they pulled out of the vault, and I'm surprised he was able to get up when he had 25 guys on top of him there on the mound.
And you know, every week on that show, what we do is sports, entertainment, and community is the kind of the three-pronged focus. And they handle the sports. I handle the entertainment, and then there's a community element that those guys go out and reach out to the Bronx and really do all they can to help community there in New York.
Oh, that's amazing.
The week before we had Mark Stein from Vanilla Fudge. Was there as a music guest, and the week before that we had Joe Pepitone and Joey D.
Yeah. Joe Pepitone and Joey D together. Well, that must have been something.
Well, and you know the funny thing about those two guys together, those guys knew each other from the 60s, because Joe Pepitone, uninitiated baseball people, Joe Pepitone played for the Yankees in the 60s, and he was an all-star first baseman.
Right.
And that was with Mickey Mantle, and Yogi Berra and all those, and they played. And he's the, and I got the chance to talk to him about facing Koufax, and that was. But one of the interesting storylines was Joey D, and Joe, but Joe Pepitone liked a party, and he would stay out in the nightclubs in those days. He was the first one to bring a hair dryer into the locker room. You know, if you remember, he was. He had this big mullet hair deal, you know, and he would stay out. He would go to Joey D's club, you know, and hang out there. So Joey D knew him from back in those days.
Wow.
He said there were times that he would stay there till 4 a.m. and then go play an afternoon doubleheader. So those guys
That's
partied
amazing.
In those days, especially the Yankees. I think Mickey Mantle and Wally Ford.
Oh, gosh, yes. Now, so let's talk a little bit about something I saw last night that leads to talking a bit about your collaborations with Sarah. Now, I have seen you collaborate with some really, really excellent musicians. But what you are doing, arranging things with Sarah, has been amazing. All of your baseball-themed songs. And then what you did with Knock Three Times last night, knocked it out of the park. That was beautiful.
Well, thanks. Yeah, Sarah is this young lady who I've known for since she was a teenager. And she's quite an amazingly talented young lady. And so I've worked with her probably 10 or 15 years now. And when I say worked with her, she, you know, we basically collaborate. And I hadn't had a chance to really collaborate with her through the years. I mean, she has performed at my Jam for Jesus for years. And done some studio work for me and stuff, but we never really had a chance to collaborate like we have lately. And it's all virtual, by the way. I have not. The last time I saw her was when we did Jam for Jesus back in December of last year. But we do everything, you know, we collaborate and we've been writing songs together and doing arrangements. And we did a version of Joey D's Peppermint Twist that is really off the charts. And, so I'm excited that something might happen with some of this stuff, you know.
And well, I'm excited, yeah. Too.
Yeah. It's and I hear that you may have her on the show.
I'm hoping. I'm relying on you being the connector to hooking us up here. I'd like to get her on as early as Friday. If not, at least sometime in the next couple of weeks. Now, I'm going to be in Orlando doing my show from Florida on the week of the, I guess, the 9th to the 13th or something like that, whatever it is, that Monday through Friday. And it'll be just like I'm doing it now from home, except I'll be doing it from my son John's house. I can't take any vacation, so what I'm going to do is just pack up the radio station and take it to Orlando so we can do a little golf in the morning, the show in the afternoon, and some of Orlando's nightlife in the evening. It should be fun for a week.
Well, it's a tough life. But
it is.
You know?
You're right about that. Robbie, we want to talk about
technology.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Technology these days, I can relate to that because there have been many times, like my Jam and Java show, I've done it a few times from Nashville. I've been, you know, with all the technology we have, you can almost be anywhere and do certain, and I have a pretty sophisticated studio in my house here, so I can't, there's certain things I cannot do, but have to allow us the luxury of doing a lot of neat things these days.
Well, that is a fact, and you know, it's not going to be any different. I'd love to be able to say I'm going to do my show from, say, Disney World, except I don't think I can, because it may be closed by the time I get down there. I'm not sure. But at least I know my son's house will be open and welcoming, so we'll get a chance to do it from his backyard.
Yeah, these are crazy times that we're in, that's for sure. You know,
They certainly are. Robbie, when you were doing the Jam and Java from the coffee house there at your church,
uh-huh.
You stopped doing that in just right around the 1st of March, shortly right after the pandemic hit.
Yes.
Are you, after this is all done and this crazy time is done, are you planning on going back to having those live shows with an audience again?
Well, yes, when this is done, but that's the, you know, that's the big question. And for a situation that, like that, which is kind of like a coffee house club of sorts, if you can picture that, it's in the church. So it's kind of close proximity, people to be sitting there. So that's going to be something that's probably going to be further than some of the earlier openings up. At our church, we just started this last Sunday, having public worship for the first time since this whole thing hit. And we did it with having only 40 people in the church, which is about about a fifth of the capacity, I think. I think our regulations are a little more stringent out here than they are maybe in Litchfield and that area. And so it's going to be slow to go as things unfold. And nobody knows exactly how they're going to unfold, because we've had a lot of scenarios here that where regulations have been lifted and then put back on and then reverted back. And so it's moving, you know, both forward and backward all the time.
Oh, I know. Yeah, forward and backward. That's kind of what we're dealing with here in Central Illinois, too. And our governor is very, very careful about getting above a certain percentage, as I know they are out there as well. We're going to take a short break, Robbie. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, okay?
Sounds great.
26 minutes after 2 o'clock, 39 degrees in mid-Illinois, visiting with Robbie Robinson out in Simi Valley. And we are talking a bit about some of the amazing things one is able to do when he's quarantined with a big studio, which is what you have. How's Frankie, by the way?
Frankie's good. He's been, you know, he's being very careful and staying home. So he and I talk on a regular basis, going over things over the phone. And early in the pandemic time, we got together a few times in his studio, both wearing masks, and the two of us, and trying to be very careful and socially distanced and all that stuff. But then about mid-August, I actually caught the COVID virus, and as did my wife Carla, I made a trip down to Nashville, and that weekend we all kind of caught it, and so we were very blessed in the fact that it was not very, we didn't have heavy symptoms. We were very mild symptoms. And it didn't slow me down, or didn't slow anybody down, actually, in our family. And we all just got through it pretty easily. And so I have not seen Frankie since I had that, because that, of course, I had to be really careful with him there. And nor did I see anybody. I was just sitting in my home studio, as it turned out. But so it's been a few weeks since I've seen Frankie. But we've been still working together, you know, virtually. And he's doing well.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. One of the things that we are getting ready now, coming up on November 1st, which happens to be a Sunday, November 1st is the 70th anniversary. I think I mentioned this to you once before. The 70th anniversary of WSMI AM, which went on in November 1st, 1950. I always tell everybody, I am older than the radio station by 2 weeks. So, but now here's what I wanted to pass on to you. Starting on Monday, November 2nd, and we'll continue for quite a number of weeks, we're going to celebrate this anniversary by starting with basically what I've been doing every day for the last 6 months, since March. I've been playing music by spotlighting different artists, and not necessarily country. They've all of pop music, you know, starting out early and moving up. And I think the last people I did were REM and U2 last week. Well, and yesterday I was doing Adele. But what I'm going to start doing on Monday the 2nd is I'm going to start with 1950 and spotlight 8 or 10 songs from every year up until music stopped being good. I guess I can say that that's a horrible thing to say.
I agree with you.
Okay.
No, it definitely changed.
Well, you know,
that's
when
exciting.
It is, and I think it's going to be fun. And what the fun part has been, I've already started putting together, and I'm up from like 50 up through 55, right at the start of the rock and roll era. And the thing that amazes me about music is that that pop stuff from, say, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, there's a lot of people that were country artists who made those charts. There's a lot of cases where I noticed in 1955, at the height of the Davy Crockett phenomenon, you know, on Disney, three different people in 1955 recorded the Ballad of Davy Crockett. They all, you know, charted very high on Billboard just at various times during the year. Started out with Tennessee Ernie Ford, then Fess Parker, and then I think it might have been someone like, I really don't know who the third guy was. I didn't catch it. I just saw a little video clip, and it might have been somebody like, I don't know, Claude, oh gosh, I can't think of his name right now. But there was a third one even that did it. And I noticed that with instrumentals, like I think Blue Tango had two different people, maybe Frank Chaxfield and somebody else. It was just surprising how the music business was then. But of course, rock and roll changed everything.
It sure did. And, you know, one of the things I remember, one of my mentors coming up was a gentleman named Teddy Phillips, and he was a big band leader out of Chicago. He had his own radio show in the 40s. And when I came out here, he and I became friends, and he was considerably older than me. And, you know, and we would go out and talk, and one of the things that he would just share with me is the fact that how music is always evolving, music is always changing. And not only the music is changing and evolving, but so is the business and the way that music functions in our society. And it's always changing because what we do as musicians and what we do as creative people who in the arts, how you connect with the audience is different in different geographical areas, and it's different in different historical times. And so as creative people, you always have to kind of adapt. But I think that kind of goes with how music was continuing to change. And it did definitely change. As a matter of fact, my friend Teddy Phillips, he was saying when the rock and roll stuff came in, economics dictated a lot of it because instead of hiring a 25-piece dance band, they could hire a 5-piece combo. And so, you know, that's all that stuff changes.
Oh, yeah. One of the other things that changed, Robbie, and I noticed this, is the introduction of the 45 RPM single. Because in 50, all the way up through the mid-50s, people were still releasing singles on 78 as well as on 45. It took a while for the 45s to actually become the standard for the singles, probably up until maybe 57, maybe, or 58.
And we're going through, obviously, what we're going through now with this pandemic, with the COVID, where basically the whole world, there's no more touring for musicians. So it's a whole new ball game, and how music is conveyed to the audiences is a whole new ball game, because for the first time in the past few months, record sales are now more than CD, sell more than CD, disc. And streaming is taking over, and so CDs seem to be on the way of the dodo bird, you know?
Oh, I know. How is it possible for a person to get signed to a label and make money these days. It just, because usually you had to go out and tour to support the label and to support the record, and basically that was really the best way to get paid, because you owed so much in studio time and upfront costs to the record company. How are they even making it profitable these days?
Well, it's a really tough time, only for musicians, for most musicians, and it's really hard. I mean, look, Broadway shut down until I think next summer. I mean,
yeah.
There's no concerts anywhere. So, you stated it very accurately. The way that musicians have made money now in the last two decades have been touring. And because record sales, you don't make that much money anyhow unless you're selling the number of units like Beyonce.
Yeah.
And that's just a handful of artists that are doing that. And so I don't know how it's going to play out. I know that music is, there's power in music, and it has, you know, so many great abilities to heal and to bring people together and to encourage people. And I think that those are the kind of messages that people need in this current climate that we're involved in, with social unrest and with pandemic and people quarantined all over the place and everybody wearing masks, and it's just such a different environment that we find ourselves in, that music can be a great healing and helping and encouraging and uplifting kind of a medium. So I don't know how it's going to play out, John Michael, but I do know that that it's going to win out in the end, one way or another. There's the old, I think it was Thomas Dolby, wasn't it, that radio killed or video killed a radio star or something to that effect. But
yeah.
And there's so much truth in that, because now people, in earlier generations, people listened with their imagination and with their ears, and now people listen with their eyes just as much, and so that's changed the dynamic. And also there's so many things. People's attention spans are not, can you imagine people putting on a whole album and just sitting there and listening to it these days? I mean, nobody has the time to do that,
So. No, it doesn't seem like it. You're 100% correct. Robbie, let's go back a minute and talk about the history of Robbie Robinson. I know we visited in the past talking about your piano lessons from your mother and then moving on to other piano teachers. Your getting together with your friends in high school and forming that first band, if you think back to that first band you put together, in your wildest dreams, did you think that 55 years later you would be surrounded by all the famous people that you know and actually become one of them? I mean, did you have that goal, or did this just unfold as one of the luckiest guys who ever lived, who had talent to match? How do you say that?
Well, No. I mean, to answer your question, short and sweet. No, I had no vision of having a career that would, be all these. I just loved music, and I just jumped into doing it, and I started playing in the band, and I never stopped. I remember seeing a buddy of mine a high school friend of mine, after a few years out of high school, and we were in our early 20s, and I hadn't seen him probably since high school. We were talking, he said, I said, I'm playing in band. He says, you're still playing in a band? And so that's what I've always just loved music, and I've had this love affair with music from an early age. And it's not just playing in a band, apparently, it's every aspect of music, and I love the creating it, I love playing it, I love performing. So I never went into it for fame and fortune or anything along those lines. I just did it because I loved it, and I still love it. And every day I get out of bed, I feel blessed that I can hop down to my studio and live and breathe just passion that I have for making music, and so that's how it's played for me. And so, and just along the way, and God's blessed me with some gifts, and I've been able to work hard at them and develop the craft side of it and develop the skills. And so I'm blessed, and get to rub shoulders with some world class people too. That's helped me along the way, because you learn from when you're surrounded by these talents, that rubs off, you know. You learn from them.
Robbie, when you were, we talk about you being music director for Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, but you're mm-hmm. also music director for your church. And mm-hmm. your church, Trinity Lutheran, there in Simi Valley, their broadcast, of course, is on our radio station on Sunday morning. And how did that come about? And I must tell you, the music is great from there as well.
We have a pretty good praise band. That's one of the blessings of being in Southern California is you have all these professional musicians that you can incorporate into your music ministry. So that's what we do there. But it came about from your boss. And I'm embarrassed to say that
You mean Brian?
I forgot. Yeah, Brian called me, and I can't remember how he heard about it, but he called me and said, hey, would it be okay if we broadcast or and I talked to the pastor, and he said, of course, it's great. And one of the new paradigms for us at the church is, and it's not a big church, it's as you say, Trinity Lutheran Church in Simi Valley, California, and we typically worship around 300 people on a Sunday. And but since we've been live streaming the services, we're getting thousands of people watching from literally all over the world. And so our pastor likes to say we've become a mega church. And so,
I would say so. But I think the music has a lot to do with that, Robbie, because the music it is not anything. I mean, it's very sacred. There's no question about it. But it's also incredibly listenable for maybe someone who's not necessarily a big fan of sacred music. I mean, Do you know what I'm trying to say there? I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to make it less than it is, but it is your ability to write this music has really been, it's been eye-opening in many ways.
Well, I think, that always comes back. And he's the guy, God is the creator of music, of course, and so, and historically, some of the greatest music ever written has been for the church. You can start and this is Reformation. Reformation is up on October 31st, so we're right around, and that's Martin Luther who started the Reformation, and he was a big proponent of music. I think God deserves our best, and so I see no reason that music should ever be watered down or anything like that for the church. And I also think that I have a strong feeling about what style should be done in a church. And I think it needs to be a style, because music is a language, and it should be a language that people can understand. And let's put it this way. And I love pipe organ music. Trust me, and I still do that. I belong to the American Guild of Organists out here for pipe organs. But how many people on the radio listen to pipe organ music?
I can't think of one.
So why would we do it in churches then? I mean, if we want to relate to the people, and so. I think the gospel of God God's message of love and salvation should be shared in a language that people can understand. And so why not do it in the language that has become the most universal musical style of all, and that's generally kind of American pop music, which is world, it's understood around the world now. So that's kind of where I come from. And the other side of it is that I love to get creative with it. So we do a lot of different styles. And
yeah,
we do traditional stuff as well.
But I do love it, and I enjoy listening. And there's nothing wrong with growing that church over the internet and over the radio, for sure.
Yeah, it's been fun, and we've been doing actually, and the music all emanates from my studio, and then I have the different musicians and singers. They send me their tracks and their videos too, because what we do is, of course, when we live stream it, we have videos of these,
right,
of all the songs. And so I'm doing I'm basically arranging and producing 5 to 6 videos and songs, you know, for each Sunday morning. So
you're copying and pasting these tracks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, it's all done at the computer, but you're performing it. In other words, I play it into the computer and then,
right,
and then refine it that way.
Oh, it's amazing to watch the finished product, for sure. One more short break, and then we'll be back with Robbie for another final segment here this hour, and we'll be right back in about 90 seconds. And our guest, Robbie Robinson, talking to us from California. Robbie, you just finished up, obviously, all the work that you did for Sunday, and not only the Jam and Java, but now with Ray and Steve and their show. Is Tuesday the day you relax until somebody like me says, oh, no, I got more for you to do?
Well, the way it's going now is that basically there's too much music and too little time. And so basically all day, every day is spent doing what I love to do, and that's creating stuff. It's a labor of love. It's what I love to do. But there is no day off, and there is no, I mean, I relax when I do it. Now, sometimes it gets a little tedious, but I'm basically a workaholic anyhow. Anybody who knows me, that's the way I'm wired.
And I like understand. The show that you put on, Jam and Java, from your studio now, and you're surrounded by, I forget, 7, 8, 9 keyboards and how many monitors. How many people are in there helping you pull the show off live using all of your recorded components? I know you've got a cameraman, but have you got more than one person in there with you?
Well, I'll tell you, that's kind of evolved and fluctuated a little bit through these last few months of how it was. I started with one other guy as an engineer who kind of helped me get the whole act together. And then I was periodically bringing, and then it became two engineers who were doing camera and also engineering the computer stuff. And then I would periodically bring in one other guest. So sometimes, and we would, you know, we would play in the studio together, but then once I had caught the COVID, then I shut all that down, of course, having people over, and that was mid-August, and ever since then I haven't had anybody in my studio or in my house. And so now it's kind of a one man show in the regard of, but I'm able to now to communicate with other artists. As a matter of fact, last night, you were there. We had Tommy John on the show.
Yeah.
Just in kind of an interview mode, and that's a last minute thing because I was supposed to have this sax player, and he was being evacuated because of fires and out here, and so I called Tommy, who I've known for a few years now, and station up California. He's a deputy board, and then Sarah Nimitz, of course, came in and jumped in too. So that was kind of cool. But I do have an engineer who's been helping me remotely because there's a program called TeamViewer or something. He can be at his house. He can be here. So we have our hands on a computer to show, but it's just me basically in the studio.
You are a workaholic because it looks like. It looks like there's a circus going on, I'm telling you. And I mean that in a good way.
It is a circus, too, no doubt about it, because some of it's so much by the seat of my pants, you know. But I've always been a kind of guy who likes to kind of improvise and just play it by ear, and that's what I do. So that's the way it is. Now, next week on the Ray and Steve, we've got Daryl Strawberry's going to be on, which is going to be great. And then for the music guest, I'm trying to decide. I'm either going to have Ellis Hall, who's this brilliant singer musician, or I was thinking about calling Paul Schaefer and having him be on. Because by the way, this is a big week for anybody who's a baseball fan, more particularly Dodger fan, of course. And tonight, this may be, hopefully, prayerfully, this will be the first world championship for the Dodgers since 1988.
And the saga of Kirk Gibson.
That's exactly right. And the reason I'm a Dodger fan, because you wonder, I'm this kid who grew up in Litchfield. What the heck is it? Has the Dodgers? I was on the Little League Dodgers. And along with another young man who became a Dodger fan, and we were on the same team, which is Robert Plummer.
Right.
And his dad was my manager. As a matter of fact, my dad was one of the managers too. So both of our dads were managers for that Little League Dodgers, and we both became these passionate Dodger fans. And I just talked to him this morning, as a matter of fact, Bob, because Bob became. He's more passionate than me because he's now part owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I know. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the point being, I guess, for these shows, you know, last night had a real baseball Dodger theme, and the same with the broadcast out of New York, you know. Is now actually reaching, it's now being broadcast in the Bronx Net, which goes out to 300,000 homes. So that thing is starting to float out there in New York.
Oh, I guess so. That's amazing. Well, you know, one of the things that, of course, I grew up a Dodger fan as well. And because my brother.
I should have known that.
My brother was a Dodger fan, and, he said, you're going to root for the Dodgers. And my first recollection is winning the World Series in 1955. So
right.
I missed all of the Brooklyn heartbreak through the 40s and the early 50s.
Yeah, well, so, I missed it too.
Thank goodness.
That's why it was so intriguing. I don't want to get too much in the weeds about baseball, because I know that not everybody has and especially Cardinal. By the way, Cardinal fans are some of the best fans in the world. There's no doubt about that.
Of course.
And,
they are.
Yeah, I mean, passionate, and they know the game. But, it was exciting for me to talk to Pepitone, because he's the only guy. I had a chance to get to know Yogi a little bit, but I never really talked to him about the 63 World Series when the Dodgers swept the Yankees four straight, probably the pinnacle of Dodger baseball history that year. Koufax and Drysdale.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yogi Berra said that hitting off Koufax is like drinking coffee with a fork. and I got a chance to ask Pepitone, how was it hitting off? He says, well, the amazing thing was Pepitone got two hits off of Koufax. But he said the last game, when he struck him out, he said he looked back. Pepitone told me, he said he looked back at the umpire and he said, that sounded sounded low. In other words, he couldn't see it.
Couldn't see it, right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of our very favorite baseball people is Bob Uecker, who, of course, played for the Cardinals in 64 when the Cardinals were in the World Series. And, of course, became a Milwaukee Brewers announcer. But Bob Uecker, I don't know if you know this, Bob Uecker has the highest lifetime batting average of any major leaguer against Sandy Koufax. He couldn't hit anybody else.
I did not know that.
But he has the highest lifetime batting average against Sandy Koufax.
That's an amazing tidbit of... thanks for sharing that with me, because I'm a big buff on baseball trivia, especially Dodger trivia, especially Koufax trivia. So that's, that's cool. Wow.
I appreciate the time, Robbie. This has been an enjoyable hour. And again, one more time, remind people how they can catch your shows on Monday.
Okay, the easiest way is to go to my Facebook page, because that you can, from my Facebook page, you can actually get to the Trinity Lutheran Services. You can get to the New York show. So it's Robbie Robinson. If you get on Facebook, Rod Robinson, and you can also, there's a Robbie Robinson YouTube channel, and you can get on there. Or you can actually go to my website, which is a little outdated, and it needs an update. That's RobbieRobinsonNews.com.
So any one of those areas can get it, and you're right,
yes.
Facebook is easy, because then Facebook, you can also send Robbie a message right while the show's on, and you're really good about acknowledging people who check in during the show, so that's great.
It's kind of fun. I mean, again, we're in a new dynamic here, and so that's the audience, and so it's, you're not going to hear applause, that's true, but you can connect with the people in a different way, so... that's enjoyable too. There's always a lot of people from Litchfield that are on every weekend, which is really fun.
Yes, it is. It is fun. Robbie, thanks so much for being part of this today. We'll do it again in a couple of months. Hopefully we'll be closer to the end of this pandemic. We'll see how we go.
Amen.
Okay?
Hey, John Michael, all the best to all my friends in Litchfield too. I love Litchfield. My heart is always going to be in Litchfield. That's for sure.
You bet. Thank you, Robbie. We'll talk soon.
Take care, buddy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.